Good morning, planet Earth. Good morning to Utah. Good morning to the universe. Good morning to the solar system they tell us we live inside of, right? We live on a planet in a solar system. This solar system is drifting through infinite space. We are surrounded by space civilizations. They do not like us. That explains the Fermi paradox, but before we get into that, it is the Planetary Status Report, and this is WRMI, 5950 kilohertz out of Miami, Okeechobee. And this is your good friend Dan, and it's either Saturday night or Sunday night between 11 p.m. and midnight Eastern Standard Time while you're listening, if you're listening on shortwave radio. But right now, it's, you know, barely 8 a.m., Saturday, September the 4th, 2021. Only 5 more shopping days till the 20th anniversary of September 11th. Only 5 more shopping days, 5 or 6, right? You got about a week. You can do your shopping, get your cake, your anniversary cake. And if you are listening on a shortwave radio, the notes for this podcast broadcast can be found by going to dfgtc.org/shownotes. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie.org/shownotes. And if you pick the right date, you'll get the right notes. If you pick the right show, right? The first topic for today is related to a person that recently died. I don't know this person personally, but if you've been in the libertarian movement, if you've been involved in the agorist voluntarist movement, if you're interested in science fiction as it relates to freedom, then you might very well have heard of L. Neil Smith. L. Neil Smith died, well, really a few days ago. I guess it would be, oh boy, time flies, right? He died about a week ago. He died a week ago, on August the 27th, 2021. He is known as a science fiction writer. He is known as a political activist. He is known as someone who has stood up for the concepts of freedom in this country for decades. I don't know his work as well as my good friend Jim Davidson, but I would say that Jim was very impacted by L. Neil Smith, and I'm going to read an obituary that Jim wrote for L. Neil Smith. I'd like to read it. You can go to igloo-luau.com or freedomlanddao.com and you can find this obituary pinned to the top. Missing Our Friend, L. Neil Smith, 1946 to 2021 by Jim Davidson. My first encounter with L. Neil Smith was about 1980. I don't remember exactly, but I was in downtown Lawrence, Kansas, at Adventure, a bookstore, which always had a good selection of paperback science fiction novels. There was a book I had not read, by an author of whom I had no knowledge. It looked really good, so I bought it. It was, of course, the probability brooch. It changed my life. It is hard to convey to someone in high school today, as I was in that year now 40 years past, how different things were back then, or how many of us, including Neil, worked to hold back the flood of badness that has come in the decades since then. At that time, there were successful mainstream publishers that still carried titles by authors who were not communist sympathizers nor eugenicists. Back then, I may have paid about $2.50 for a paperback, rather than on the order of 11 bucks or so today. The same people who destroyed the value of the dollar were hard at work destroying the publishing industry. My enjoyment of Neil's novel was a big part of how it changed my life. Suddenly, there was another author for whom to look. But the core lesson of the story, and I quote, "It did not have to be this way," was vital to my future happiness. The worlds of the North American Confederacy, which Neil would share with his readers in the following years, were places of sanity, good humor, joy, possibility, and wonder. People knew to resist the first encroachments of tyranny and were better off because they did. Nor were they super beings, but good, sensible people. Neil filled his books with good people. Some were smarter than others. The ones who wanted to stay free were well armed. There were also really interesting alien races that came from careful examination of terrestrial species, like mollusks, arachnids, mammals, and slime mold, to name only a few. And of course, there were the perfidious villains of the Hamilton, Buckley, and Hillary sorts, endangering freedom, destroying lives, and being careless of privacy and private property for all the usual excuses. It was in the context of never being disappointed in any of his books that I learned from my friend Bob Boardman about this website in 1995. Here were good people writing great essays, articles, and commentaries. Wendy McElroy, Claire Wolfe, Paul Bonneau, J. Neil Shulman, and many others who could be found in the letters or in the articles. It was a singular honor for me to have my first submitted essay published here, as I recall, November 1995, on L. Neil Smith's website. Many things I have sent and have been published there since. About 7 years later came the capstone of my encounters with Neil. In October 2002, I took my last series of commercial airline flights to reach Phoenix from Houston. Neil was there, speaking at Freedom Summit. I met this hero of freedom and free enterprise at an impromptu pizza party put together one evening early in the summit by Ernie Hancock, one of the Freedom Summit founders. We talked about propertarian philosophy and recent world events and had a great time. The years since have included innumerable emails, a few phone calls, and many essays and editorials in these pages. At one point, Neil and I discussed the possibility of a new scouting manual he would write with illustrations by Scott Beezer and others that I wanted to commission. That would have been around 2004 or 2005. When the notional value of my own digital gold stocks had been possible to liquidate them without collapsing their value was very close to $3 million. Of course, the digital gold stock exchange my associates and I were operating out of Vanuatu was very thinly traded. And of course, by April 2007, as the acceptance of e-gold was going exponential, the federal government, destroyed it. It was the third fortune I'd lost to government, so not exactly a surprise to me. And it did lead to others creating Bitcoin and 11,000 plus cryptocurrencies that fulfill the denationalization of money ideas of F.A. Hayek that now have over $2 trillion in U.S. value, U.S. dollar value. But among my regrets is not having the funds to commission that scouting manual. In recent months, friends in the Ozarks have been working on a related project, a Freedom Guards Academy, to teach young people about the ways and means to stay free. Neil predicted many things in his books. He showed generations of Americans that we can be free and that being free, we are always more prosperous. Most of all, taking the work of Wheeler's Inflationary Universe and similar thoughts on cross-time alternative worlds, Neil showed us not only that it didn't have to be this way, but also he showed that choosing freedom would have brought far more glorious results. I send my condolences to Neil's family and friends. I miss him very much. Somewhere nearby, there is a timeline where Aubrey de Grey provided longevity treatments to Neil, and his spirit lives on. In this timeline, his ideas and spirit are carried on by the millions of readers of his books and essays and editorials. One of the great men of our age has passed away. We who remain shall carry on and keep armed. This is the obituary of L. Neil Smith, written by my friend Jim Davidson. I met Jim Davidson in 2017. I'm foggy on some of these years because between you and I and outer space, the last 5-6 years have been a bit of a blur for me. Lots of reasons, and I don't really want to go into them. 2016 was kind of a crappy year for lots of reasons that I don't want to go into. But I met Jim Davidson in 2017, and, you know, there's never a perfect time to meet people. There's never a perfect time to make new friends. He's one of those folks I wish I would have met 20 years earlier, but that never happened. When he met me, he met somebody that was pretty burnt out. Yes, I'm an anarchist. I am. I'm an anarchist mostly because I got kicked around and beat up enough that that's where I ended up. I mean, you either end up there or you end up dead. That's true for a lot of us. A lot of us end up as anarchists because philosophically, psychologically, every other option was killing us. And I believe every other option is killing the human race, just as L. Neil Smith probably believed that all these other options to freedom are some choice between either a slow or a fast poison. I met my friend Jim in 2017, and we attempted to work on some projects together. And if these projects didn't quite turn out the way we expected, there are two very good reasons. One, it's kind of hard to do fundraising on the Death Star for freedom. It is. It's hard to raise funds to defend freedom for a number of reasons, not least of which people have been suckered by the voting game. But I also think people have felt disappointed by the people that were supposed to fight for freedom. You see, they assumed that there were these guardians, there were these defenders. Listen, I took the oath in 1996. When I took the oath as a U.S. Army officer, I assumed, and this is how dumb and crazy I was, I assumed I was taking the oath to a free country. That wasn't true. Those guardians you think exist are not there, or if they are there, they're not the paid-for guardians. They're not the ones that get paid with stolen taxpayer money. The actual guardians are folks like L. Neil Smith and folks like my friend Jim. Jim and I worked on this, and it was difficult raising money for the project we worked on, which I'll describe in a second. And it was difficult because he had a partner, me, and I wasn't really in a place to be anybody's partner in 2017. I wasn't. Not even sure if I am today. I mean, I am probably capable of doing the work I need to do to get by, but I don't know if I'm a good partner right now. I just don't know. I'm not in the place that Jim is. I'm not in the place of optimism that he's able to hold on to. But what Jim and I worked on was something called resilient ways. And the idea was, and this was not my idea, this was Jim's idea. Originally, the idea was to build a website that allowed people to essentially trade living space, basically to allow people to, I don't know how to put it, to allow people to share living space, to share rooms, apartments, cabins, you name it, in such a way that people are allowed to move about securely, privately, off the grid. Think Airbnb, but kind of secret, which again, our society doesn't value privacy right now. So this probably scares people. What do you mean, Dan? Are you saying you're enabling people to be private about where they live? Yeah, that was our crazy idea. The other idea, and which really became Resilient Ways, was to build an organization with a goal of constructing intentional, liberty-based communities. Intentional meaning people want to be there, not random collections of people, but people that want to participate according to either the non-aggression principle or, as Jim would say, the zero aggression principle. And currently, Jim is doing this. If you want to know, is he doing it? He's doing it in the Ozarks. If you want to learn more about it, you can contact him. His information's available on his website at freedomlanddao.com. And if you're interested, I would contact Jim. He's looking for investors. He's looking for support. But going back to 2017, the goal was to help people build these communities, to construct a kind of manual, which we did together, a kind of manual to organize yourselves in a community such that you can live respectfully. And Jim's doing that right now. Another idea we had, we were looking at property in Kansas, and it was this old piece of property. I forget where it was exactly. I think it was north of Lawrence, but don't quote me on it. But there was this old piece of property, and it had a lot of acreage. It had natural springs. It was at one time a kind of sanatorium or rest hospital for people recovering from whatever. And it had a roller rink on it with the old school kind of hardwood roller rink floors, for roller skating. It was a nice piece of property, and one of the ideas that Jim said is, L. Neil Smith would be really excited about working on this and turning this into that alternative universe, the universe that existed because a few words were added to the Declaration of Independence. It wasn't just that a government required consent of the governed, but that the government required unanimous consent of the governed. That one word, unanimous, along with consent, those two words together, was the difference between two universes. The one we ended up in, which basically is kind of a slave universe, and the other one where people kept their promise to defend freedom. Because they understood that you could not force people, you could not coerce people, you could not treat people like animals and slaves. You could not do this. It was not right. And they understood this in that other world. So the idea was to take this piece of property in Kansas and set it up as a kind of theme park along the lines of Probability Brooch, the story itself. And again, I think it would have been awesome. Circumstances haven't really been, and let's just cut right to the chase, and I think L. Neil Smith, wherever he is, would understand this. Circumstances haven't really been in the offing for people wanting to promote freedom. They haven't really been. I mean, I understand that some people are really optimistic about cryptocurrency, and cryptocurrency is great, and I totally respect my friend Jim, but I don't think it's enough. It's not even nearly enough. And what's missing, I think, is the passion to fight for something that people think is crazy now. You see, people believe that if the government says, we will give you health care, that they can do that. Well, they can in some cases, not in all cases. This is not what they tell you. They lie to you. They say in all cases they can. And so people believe that. People believe without the government, scary people would bust down their doors. Well, that's weird because usually the scary people, the ones that, you know, use machine gun fire, the ones dressed like soldiers, those are usually the cops. So it's funny that people say, well, Dan, if we didn't have a government, scary people would bash down my door early in the morning and maybe kill me. Well, gee, I wonder if that ever happened to Duncan Lemp. And if you want to know who Duncan Lemp was, research it. It might be hard to find anything about that story now. It's not ancient history. It's just that most people don't care. You see, that's the difference between, I guess, where I'm at and where some of my friends are at now. I don't think the government has the power to do any of the scary things it's currently threatening, but I do believe they've convinced a lot of people that they have that power. And that's about all you have to do when you're a bully. When you're a bully, really most of it's magic. Most of it's just, you know, psychological. It's trickery. It's fraud. Because the bully could easily be destroyed by all those that the bully attacks. But people just don't want to attack. They don't want to fight back. I mention all this because it's worth remembering somebody like L. Neil Smith. I am no expert on his work. I would say Jim Davidson would be more of the person who would be an expert compared to me. I am not super familiar with him. I became familiar with him for a number of reasons, not least of which was the project that I worked on with Jim. But Jim would talk about him. And you know, he had the graphic novel in the bathroom, which I thought was cool. Before I close this out and move on to the next topic, I think it's important to always remember on some level that we're not doomed as long as we keep fighting back. You know, in a universe described by L. Neil Smith, and again, I don't believe in the multiverse, so there's another thing that's sort of different between me and Jim, but Jim and myself. But that being said, in the possibilities that exist in time, one can think about what would have been different, what could have been. It could have been very different. It did not have to be like this, but it did end up like this. But to me, the more important question is, does it have to remain this way? You see, what troubles me, and I don't know what L. Neil Smith would say, and I would leave Jim his own voice to speak for himself, but what troubles Dan are all the people out there who tell us there is no hope. And think about this for a second, because this is me saying it. Probably one of the darker people on shortwave radio, probably one of the darker podcasts you listen to, and I'm telling you what really pisses me off are the folks that say, we have no choice, we have no option, the government took over in some magical way, give up and just give up. Well, okay, because that's easy. We can all just give up. We can accept the situation for what it is. We can pretend that there is no way around it. But what if that is bullshit? What if that's all kind of just noise and propaganda? What if there's no way in hell they could do any of the creepy things they want to do if we were willing to say no? And I don't know if it has to be all of us. It just has to be enough of us. Enough people willing to say no. Enough people willing to not participate. But all I see are people jockeying for participation prizes. So it's hard for me to gauge this question. Next topic. I got up this morning, I had to go to the Glinket place. I had to make sure I got to the Glinket place to get my, my Tormiola sandwiches and my Strinko grease. I went up to the counter and I said, "Can you give me the food chorg? Will you wrap up that sclub you met that's hanging on the wall and fill it with all the oils and tell me this is the world?" I went by the Glinkett's place and I got my chorg and my sclub you met, and they rubbed it on their buttholes and they put it into an old nasty bag that used to hold tampons. And I went outside and I stared at the sky. I looked up at the sky. I saw its colors, its strangeness. I just kept staring at the sky. When I went by Glinkett's, there was an old slave herder, an old Scringly, and she was yelling at one of the underling slaves, saying, "Do you see the sticky gromuli underneath the counter? Do you see those 3 inches of stringtus? Scrape that off and put it into a bucket so we can mix it with the other stuff and make you a breakfast sandwich." Clean the sticky grease from below the flavel. Folks are starting to get hepatitis and the monkey herpes. Yeah, I don't know why I just talked about that. That was gross. So next topic, because it's Saturday, why not, right? I want to talk about prayer, and before I continue, the thing about L. Neal Smith, I don't know if anyone else is going to spend a lot of time talking about him. I hope that they have. I hope that people like this are remembered, but you know what? You can never tell. I think that one can hope, if you're doing the writing that he did, that somewhere down the age, if not now, but in the future, people look back and say, there was once a person who did what he or she could. That's what I would like to say before I really move on here. I can't say anything else. I don't think I'm qualified to. Prayer always works. Now, what does that mean when I say prayer, as in praying, always works? It sounds like I'm about to sell you on something that's a gimmick, and I'm not. I'm not going to sell you on a gimmick because it's not a gimmick. Prayer always does work. I believe this because it's been true for me, and I think it's been true for a lot of people. Now, if you think of praying, and again, I can't speak to your spiritual or belief system. I'm a Christian, so I'm telling you that when I pray to my Lord, it pretty much always works. But when you think of it, you can't really think of it as a quid pro quo. I'll do this, God, if you do this for me. I'll try to be better if you help me out. Give me the money for the car, the home, the boat. Help me get married. Help me here. Help me there. I'm not saying the Lord won't do those things. I think the Lord does help. But I don't know that praying for stuff and then not getting it is a measure of the success of prayer. I think prayer always helps because it changes the way you look at the world. I think it's good to be grateful for the things that you have, and it's good to be humble before the universe, even if it's not God. It's good to remember that you are who you are in this place. And I think prayer can be humbling if it's done correctly, but I'm not going to tell you how that is. My friend Jim has his own theories, and I think he's correct about pretty much a lot of it. I have my own perspective. I'll find out when I die. I'll find out who's right, who's wrong about all the little details, most of which is probably not salvation critical. So, you know, Jim and I and other friends will have a conversation in heaven about who said this and who said that, but I don't think it will matter at that point. It won't make any difference at that point who said what about what. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this topic either, but I would tell you prayer always does work. It's just a question of what you're expecting from it. If you're expecting to communicate your love to Jesus, that always works, if you're sincere. If you are praying to help others, I believe that always works, but I can't tell you that you always get what you expect. You know, you can pray when a loved one is dying of cancer. You could say, Lord, take the cancer away. Sometimes that's the answer to your prayer, but it's not always the answer. And if you're disappointed because you prayed and it didn't get rid of the cancer, well, then I'm not really sure that you understand what prayer is. It's hard to imagine why the Lord in heaven couldn't just give everybody everything they wanted. It's one of those things where you'd say, well, Dan, don't you think God's infinite? Yeah, the Lord in heaven is infinite, infinitely powerful, infinitely wise in every way that the word infinite is meaningful. But if you think on it, and remember, God created us to some extent, right? In his image. If you think on it and use that intelligent part of your brain that God gave you, if all that Jesus ever did, if all that God ever did was grant wishes, imagine what the world would be like. I mean, you can think of it in terms of some Hollywood movie where God just grants wishes and everything goes crazy, and that would be kind of crazy, but just think about the world. If everything you ever wanted was given to you simply by praying, what would that be to you? What would a prayer be to you? How would that be different than going to the drive-in at McDonald's and ordering whatever sklub you met or chorg sandwich or whatever stuff you're going to order there that you're going to put into your mouth hole and will squeeze out hours later? How is that different? Prayer is not going to the booth and screaming into a speaker, I would like 2 cheeseburgers, a fry, and a large Coke. And if it did work like that, I would have to wonder about the nature of the universe. Does this mean I think not everybody deserves what they want or get, or some people get prayers answered and some people don't? You've got to figure that out. If you're a person of faith, you have to figure that out really probably after you're dead. You might not get the answer to that question. Why is it that some prayers are answered? Really good people pray really hard. Really terrible things happen to people and you'd say that person didn't deserve it. Why did that happen? Why was that person made to face those trials? I don't have answers to those questions. I know that Jesus does, and there's another good reason to pray, to find those answers, to say, Lord in heaven, why is it that some people seem to get everything they want and other people get almost nothing? Lord in heaven, why is it that some people are lonely and die alone and in sadness while others are surrounded by love? Why is it that some land can grow mighty crops of food to feed their peoples, but other lands are desolate and barren and unable to bear fruit? Why is it? These are good questions. These are good questions whether you believe in God or not. These are good questions to ask why the world is as it is. You're not necessarily going to get a satisfactory answer, but these are good questions. But before I move on, I'll say I think prayer always works. If you have the intention, and let me be more specific, I think Christian prayer always works. I can't speak to other religions, but I think Christian prayer always works. If you have the intention, if you have, you know, love in your heart, if it's clear to Jesus that you're praying and you're not just demanding or not just saying, why me? You know, if you're praying and you're not just complaining. And I'm not saying the Lord doesn't want to hear your complaints, but the Lord is probably more than just a complaint box too. Next topic. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. The optimist bet has always, mostly, given the nature of the universe, been the easy bet. The master of probability discovers the impossible bets. He says, hit me on 17. That's a quote from Dr. Freckles. I'll read that one again. The optimist bet has always, mostly, given the nature of the universe, been the easy bet to bet on optimism. But the master of probability discovers the impossible bets. And he or she says, hit me on 17. I don't know. That's a weird quote from Dr. Freckles, and it's probably going to be difficult to disentangle what it means in a way. A friend of mine pointed out several weeks ago, a good friend of mine who I left behind, like that Cameron guy in that movie, Left Behind. A friend of mine that I left behind in Washington State pointed out to me a few weeks ago when we were talking on the phone, and he's pointed this out before, that, you know, the reason why people value optimism and the reason why people are optimistic is because the universe itself, when you think about it, is inherently optimistic. If it wasn't, like if more good things didn't happen than bad things in that basic sense, then life itself would never have happened. I mean, if you think about life itself, the probability, the likelihood of organic chemistry, the likelihood that the Earth ends up in what they call the Goldilocks zone, that perfect spot where you have the triple point of water, frozen water, liquid water, and water in a gaseous form, triple point. If you think about all the odds, all the likelihoods, even the moon itself serves a purpose, but it's random, right? If you don't believe in God, it's totally random. And yet the odds of having a moon that does what it does and serves a purpose, it just seems weird, right? Now, of course, the explanation that scientists give today is multiverse. Well, there's a multiverse, and we ended up in one particular universe, and there are, you know, an infinite, innumerable number of others. That might be true. I don't believe it, but who knows, maybe. But if there isn't a multiverse, then it is an extremely unlikely thing that life ever happened. And in a way, the only way it could be considered likely is if the universe itself, on some basic level, is inherently optimistic. It is. 99 times out of 100, okay, all things being equal in the universe, most of the time, the things that we would want to happen do happen. Okay, great disasters are rare. If you believe what you're told, and again, I'm not saying you have to believe the scientists or not believe them, but if you believe what you've read in your books, the Earth has been around for what? 4 billion years, 5 billion years. Life on Earth has been around for a few billion. In the time that complex life has been around, which I think has been less than a billion years, but in the time that you've had complex organisms, multicellular organisms, there have been several major extinction events, huge extinction events, you know, five, and I think they say we're on number six right now, if you believe what you're told, that right now we are living through the sixth great extinction on planet Earth. And of course, they blame people doing people things. What's really funny, though, is the people that blame people are often atheists. And I don't know how that works. Because we're just organisms, and we are optimized to do the thing we do. We're tiger beavers. You let us loose. And according to these atheist types, we're just gonna, you know, screw and poop and pollute our way. And yet these same types will sometimes give us speeches about, well, we should have done something different. They'll bemoan and they'll get sad. If you really were an atheist at this point in human history, if you really didn't believe in God, if you were simply an atheist and you believed all the things you were told by researchers and scientists, then how could you look at what's going on right now other than, yes, this is what happens. This was going to happen. It's not that it had to happen, but it kind of makes sense. Life itself, okay? Life itself is aggressive. Living things will expand if they can. If you've ever had a mold infestation in your home, you probably understand this. If you had termites or ants in your home, you probably understand this. Living things will do what they have to do to survive, period. And if you're an atheist, if you're a naturalist, materialist atheist type, you have to include human beings. Otherwise, you're practicing a kind of weird dualism, and I don't know where you're coming from, baby. So I will say this. If you don't believe in God, then I don't see how you could ever get upset about any of the things going on right now. Because everything that's happening kind of did have to happen. And if you understand that the universe is more or less, on a certain level, inherently optimistic, then it does mean that these really terrible things, like mass extinctions or, you know, whatever, they don't happen that often. If human civilization as we know it has been around for 6,000 or 7,000 years, that's a fraction of nothing in the time that life has been on Earth. And that's almost nothing in the time between the last great extinction and today. Almost nothing. A blip. 7,000 years is a blip compared to all that. Even compared to how long they say humans have been around. It's not much, okay? I think you could say it's less than a couple of percent, you know, maybe. Maybe it's a couple, 1 or 2%, but it's not much. It's almost nothing. So most days of the week, most days of the month, most months of the year, most years of your life until you're dead, most years of your life, you know, things won't necessarily be great, but they won't necessarily be hell either. You'll have food, you'll have water, maybe. Maybe you'll even fall in love. Maybe you'll even fall in love. So if you're an optimist, in a way, you could say that the universe could not exist the way it currently does if most of the time things failed. Most of the time, things kind of have to work in a certain kind of way. Otherwise, it would be noise and darkness, and there would be no complex life. And if you listen to somebody who believes in the multiverse, they'll say, Dan, those universes exist. There's the universe of the great black nothing, the great mauve, the great swamp. There's the universe where there's only pretzels. There's the universe where there's only cats. There's a universe where cats and dogs wage war perpetually in outer space. Somewhere out there, they're doing battle. cats and dogs. In their spaceships. But even the multiverse is kind of an optimistic thing in a way, if you believe in it, because it means, you know, it means anything that can will happen, and it did happen and it will happen. And that seems kind of optimistic in a way. I don't know. I'm not really an optimist. And neither is Dr. Freckles. But I'm not really sure pessimism is what we think it is. Pessimists, real pessimists, actual pessimists, like myself, learn to fall in love with the things that turn out right. And a lot of things do. Actual pessimists learn to accept things for what they are in a way that optimists never can. And every once in a while, when it comes to the big question mark, can life continue as it is, the pessimists are right, but they're also smart enough to realize it doesn't matter. You see, that's the thing about being aware of certain facts. Sometimes being aware of certain facts is irrelevant. It doesn't make any difference at all. You're simply aware. You know that something could happen. You might even have certainty that it will happen. But it doesn't help. And it would be better to just take that part of your brain and rip it out and throw it in the garbage. That's how I feel some days. A lot of days these days. I don't really know for certain what's going on, but I know that the human race, either accidentally or on purpose, is being driven to a point of madness. I don't see any positive purpose to that. But I don't know. I guess if I were an optimist, I could see an angle, maybe. I don't know. And maybe this whole optimism-pessimism thing is crap, too. Maybe it's just BS. Maybe it really isn't one or the other. And maybe there is no such thing as a pessimist or an optimist. My friend from Washington State, despite where he lives, I mean, he lives in the country there, so he can still separate himself from the psychological disease. But my friend, it makes a good point about life. Life itself has an inherently optimistic or positive feature to it because it exists, because it was able to exist. And if you're a Christian, you can go even further. Like, I've been talking mostly about this optimist-pessimist thing from the perspective of the secular person, but if you're a Christian, you know in your heart that it turns out okay, that it turns out actually pretty great. You know in your heart that the vision, the plan of Jesus Christ will be fulfilled. Maybe it won't be fulfilled in your lifetime, okay? I know that these days it feels like these could be the end times. Brothers and sisters, I have no idea. I think it's as likely as not that there are people that want to convince you that it's the end times, that it is the end times. I don't really know. I know that people are being driven crazy, and it's either being done on accident or it's being done on purpose. Could be a mixture of the two, but I am pretty certain people are being driven insane, and I don't see the purpose in it. You could say the purpose is to replace our system with another system. What would you replace it with? The only next stop for the human race is a giant mental health facility. And there are not the resources, the robots, the doctors, the barbed wire. There is not the equipment to build a mental health facility for billions of people. It does not exist. That society will never happen. That's not a pessimist thing to say. That's not an optimist thing to say. I am telling you, in my opinion, as a practical matter, that the FEMA camp scenario is a non-starter. The only way a FEMA camp thing is going to happen at this point is if you send out a bunch of amber messages telling people to just build one and then LARP it. But do I think the resources exist to do that? No. The only resources they seem to have, and they're using them in abundance, are these resources for psychological manipulation. But they're kind of cheap resources. If people had the courage to just turn off the news, to turn off their smart device, to walk away from their computer, to walk away from their TV set, if they had the courage to ignore the fear, all that power goes away instantaneously. That's the power they have. It seems tremendous, it seems incredible, but it's all special effects. If you're able to turn away from it, their power ceases. But as long as they can control you, as long as they can tell you to do things, as long as they can get you to accept some of their crooked money to report on your neighbors or to be a snitch, it works. As long as they can convince you that it's way more likely that the magical COVID monkey herpes killed your grandma than, you know, the hospital, which is actually more likely, as long as they can convince you, no, it was the monkey herpes. It wasn't hospital failure. It wasn't hospital incompetence. It isn't the case that in the last 2 decades, millions of Americans have been killed by preventable hospital-acquired infections. No, 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 no. It's the magical monkey herpes. Don't contact a lawyer. Don't look into it. Be an optimist, right? Or pessimist. Which one are we? If we accept the story of the creeps in charge, are we an optimist or are we a pessimist? Which one is it? Are we a realist or are we some sort of absurdist? I don't know. What I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, is maybe that whole distinction is BS, okay? Next topic. Oh, I don't want to talk about the new variant. The new variant. You know, it's funny. This article is from Zero Hedge. Okay. In fact, I'm going to go to Zero Hedge and I'm going to read you a line from one of their articles they posted because I find it educational. And I think it's worth discussing. Oh, where is it? Where is that funny article? Is it the one about the drones? Yeah, I think it's the one about the drones. So Zero Hedge had an article that got published this day, you know, Saturday, September the 4th, 2021. And the headline of the article is about the medical drones being deployed over Italian beaches to check and see if people have fevers. And if you're listening on shortwave radio, this is the Planetary Status Report. This is 5950 kilohertz. WRMI out of Miami, Okeechobee. And the notes for this podcast broadcast can be found by going to dfgtc.org/shownotes. And if you pick the right date, you'll get the right notes, right? The last sentence in this article on Zero Hedge, and I'm going to read it to you. Big Brother is bigger than ever and will continue to expand and intrude into our daily lives. Now, why did I just read that sentence? I have a podcast which I call Powerlessness Porn. And the reason why I call it powerlessness porn is because there's a lot of people out there telling you there's nothing you can do and you haven't got any choices and you better just accept it. And what's really funny is often they'll try to sell you on some investing scheme that allows you to ride out this horror story, which really makes no sense. But there are lots of commentators in the alt movement who are telling you it's over. And the cage door is closed, and the cameras are everywhere, and they're going to come by your house. But I think that's all bullshit. And this last sentence, I'll read again, Big Brother is bigger than ever, and will continue to expand and intrude into our daily lives. There is nothing logical, scientific, or rational about that sentence. So why does Zero Hedge put it there? Why did Tyler Durden put it there? Does he want to tell people there's no hope? Question, is Tyler Durden an optimist or a pessimist? Oh, but doesn't he like rip off Fight Club and on a long enough timeline, blah, blah, blah? You know what? You don't know shit about these people. Neither do I. All I know is that message tells you you have no hope. And there's no way you can do anything. And it's already over. And maybe it was over before you were born. But I'm going to sell you on something different here. Number one, Tyler Durden's full of shit. That sentence is absurd propaganda bullshit. And only a statist voting commie piece of shit would write a sentence like that. It is never over till it's over. If you have breath in your lungs, you can fight. If you can stand on your feet, you can fight. If you are able to think, you can fight back. You don't simply have to obey. You don't have to say to yourself, if I don't fight today, I can't fight tomorrow. You can fight tomorrow. I'd prefer you fight today, but you can fight tomorrow. It is true, the longer we all wait, the more painful it's going to be, but I'm thinking pain's on the menu. So I'm not really sure that's something any of us can avoid at this point. That sentence from Tyler Durden on Zero Hedge tells you that Big Brother is bigger and bigger and intrudes everything and you got no choices and you're fucked. And what I'm saying is that's bullshit. I don't want to read about the latest Delta variant, X-ray variant. I don't want to talk about today's latest horror because every day you'll get a different one. Every day you'll get a different horror story. Because whether this is a multiverse or not, we're definitely not in the Gallatin universe. We're not in L. Neil Smith's probability brooch cool place. We're in a different place. We're in a place that we just have to accept, right? It's not all good, it's not all bad. I don't know or understand why the world is going so crazy, but it looks as if it's going crazy. And it could be on purpose, and it could be accidental, and it could be a combination, and we don't know. But what I can say is that as long as you still are alive, you have choices. I tell you what, to me, that sounds like what an optimist would tell you. And I'm not an optimist according to every person I've ever met. But what I will say is this, as long as you are able to move and to think, you have choices, you have options. And you should never let anyone tell you that you're out of options. Period. Never. Never let someone convince you there are no other choices. When you let them convince you of that, you have given them your power. You've given them the only power you have, and that's your free will. If someone tells you there are no more choices, you say, screw you, there are always choices. If someone tells you the door is closed, screw you, I have a chainsaw. If someone tells you, you can't climb that mountain's too steep, tell them you made a Swiss seat. Tell them you've got your climbing rope. You're ready to go. If someone tells you that there's something you can't do, it might be true, but don't you want to find out first? If someone tells you you'll always be poor, wouldn't you like to try to be rich? If someone tells you the planet is doomed, life will continue nowhere. If someone tells you everything is over, you should kiss your butt goodbye. You should say, where's the whiskey pie? You should say, I'm on my way. You should tell that mofo that there are always choices we can make.